Welcome to Wild Horse and Burro Radio, an educational outreach program of Wild Horse Freedom Federation. Good afternoon, everyone here in the United States, and we'd especially like to welcome our listeners from across the pond in the United Kingdom, and it's good evening to you there. Our listeners can call in with any questions you might have after the first half hour, and that call-in number is area code 917-388-4520, and then press 1 to get in the host key. And hang on, because sometimes we have to wait till our guests stop talking so we don't cut them off mid-set. So just hang on. Don't give up. Our guests tonight are going to be Don Vincent, Head of Communications for the Donkey Sanctuary UK, and Marjorie Ferriby, Director of Wild Burros Affairs for Wild Horse Freedom Federation. Welcome to the show.
And hello.
I want to let our listeners know we're still waiting for Don to call in from the UK, but Marjorie's here. So welcome to the show. Marjorie, could you give our new listeners just sort of a brief synopsis of the issue? Tell them what EJAWA is and give them a brief synopsis of the problem.
EJAWA is a boiled down donkey skin. It goes through, there are 99 steps in making EJAWA. And it is considered to be a national class intangible cultural heritage item with over, I've had various readings, 2,000 years or 3,000 years. They've been making it for all this time. But it was once exclusive to only the emperors. It's now become a luxury item of the 21st century for a newly empowered middle class in China, and it is. Mm-hmm. And the other problem is that they are now they're promoting it to the wider public, and you've got, you know, 1.3 billion people that want this quote unquote magic product. It originated, the birthplace of it is the Shandong province, which is in East China, and it's Dongyi County. And there's a factory there that processes over 1 million donkeys every year, just one factory.
And they, is the name of the company Dongyi, too?
Yeah, it's a Dongyi, and it's in Dongyi County, and which is East China's Shandong province. So it's in the Shandong province. So that's why they call it Shandong Dongyi, and Dongyi is a county there. So, what the big problem is, you know, you have rural villages from Africa to South America are having their donkeys stolen and slaughtered and skinned, and it makes them poor overnight, because that's, I mean,
well,
the whole
poorer. Yeah, this is their only transportation. Yeah.
Well, or livelihood,
Yeah.
Or, you know, they they do in some places trash collection and. Sticks, gathering water. I mean, they make their little tiny bit of money with their donkeys. There's 600 million people worldwide that rely on donkey, mule, or horse to survive. I mean, these are the harshest conditions on earth. So they are the ones that have the least voice, because they don't have the money to fight decisions made by their government, which is unfortunate.
Deb?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, Dawn is in the chat room, and I've told her to call in on the call-in number, so hopefully we can get her on that way.
Good. Okay. We'll talk with her soon then. Okay. So, Marjorie, I'm going to jump ahead and ask you another question. We're worried about the tremendous amount of burros that are being killed off. How long does it take for a donkey to have offspring? How long are they pregnant? What's their period?
Well, another interesting talent of the donkey is that they can hold off their pregnancy for a couple of months, waiting for conditions to get right. So they can go from 12 to 14 months being pregnant, and so they don't have a high rate of reproduction. And the attrition rate is really quite high. Only 50% of the foals born survive to be a year old, and only 75% of those make it to 2 years of age. So they have a rather high attrition rate. The foals are very delicate. Once they reach adulthood, they're hardy as they can be, you know?
Yeah, but not so much the foals,
No.
Yeah.
Oh. sadly, they don't take into account any of the possible, you know, things that can happen to donkeys in the wild. Our wild burros have all kinds of things befall them. And there are predators out there, whether they want to admit it or not. And certainly there are many that die, you know, they die of old age or accident or, you know, jack fights.
Mm-hmm.
So there's giving birth, there's a number of things that happen to them. So
can I ask a question?
Sure.
Marjorie, what is the benefit supposed to be of this fad? What's supposed to be?
Okay, so
we're all trying to learn
now,
the pronunciation.
TCM. You'll see TCM. TCM stands for traditional Chinese medicine. Yijiao, it happens to be one of the pillars of traditional Chinese medicine. So they will use it in many, many products, along with white staghorn and ginseng. So they will use it for circulation problems. They will put it in beauty creams. They will put it, they say that it increases vitality. So a person, they say that you give it to a worker and the worker can work all day, increases libido. The numbers of, cures MS, cures menstrual cramps. I mean, the numbers of things that they say that this does is really incredible. And they say that part of the reason why it is, it's such a magical, I'll use that word in quotes, magical product, is that from the elements in the water that are in the Shandong province. So the actual water that they use to process this this product for people, it comes out as like little bars that they can break it off and put it in water and melt it down, or they can put it in bars, bars that they eat. So it's used in a lot of different ways. What is disturbing, though, is that it is being sold on eBay and through Amazon. So it has a much further reach than just the Chinese people. And there's a petition online that was put on up by Kathy Purdy to sign and ask these large companies to not carry this product. So it seems to be doing rather well. The petition online, you can look for it.
Is she with an organization or?
No. She's a private citizen that's put up a rather nice petition. So I just thought I would point that out to people.
Great.
Point that out to people.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. Every person can make a difference.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody can help. And that's the big thing, is that people in the USA have no idea that already our USA donkeys are part of the skin trade. Every single donkey that's crossing into Mexico is now, has the potential of being a part of the trade, because they are, Mexico is one of the countries that is exporting for the Chinese trade. So
as we've seen by reviewing the Bureau of Land Management's, sales emails with proposals, there's a lot of all they have to do is go, hey, I'm in Mexico, I'd like to buy 300 for this. The BLM, hopefully they're checking into this and know about this. But if they don't, they could be bulk selling our burros there. But even if they don't, with these flooding the internet sales with burros all at once, a lot of them are probably going to slaughter there for the skin trade anyhow.
I think we have Dawn on. Yes.
Dawn?
Hello. Good evening.
Hey. Good evening. Welcome to the show, Dawn. Again, everyone, this is Dawn Vincent, Head of Communications for the Donkey Sanctuary UK. We kind of got off starting a little bit. Marjorie's told our new listeners a little bit about Yijiao and, and how often a donkey has offspring. I was going to ask you, Dawn, has a worldwide population count of donkeys been conducted recently that you know of?
No, I'm afraid there hasn't been a count in recent years. The estimated donkey population is a source that we have is from the FAO, which is from the livestock policy, and it's 44 million donkeys. But I think donkeys are a species that are quite invisible, and they fall through the cracks quite often in censuses of either livestock or wild animals. because they're domesticated and they're very difficult to count, basically.
Uh-huh. And so people realize how close, you know, donkeys are to extinction or what could happen. 44 million sounds like a lot, but aren't they killing about up to 10 million a year in China alone? And that's not even counting the other countries?
Okay, so the donkey sanctuary, in the last sort of 2 to 3 years, our partner organizations that we're working with all over the world have noticed this emerging trade of, you know, donkeys have been eaten and consumed for their meat for a number of years, but for trading for the skins has really kind of taken over. And we know that in China, the supply of donkey skins was 1.8 million last year, and there are reports of the demand being as many as 4 to 10 million donkeys a year. So you can see how we're all concerned about the populations of donkeys in the world. You know, if 1.8 million donkeys are taken each year, that's seriously going to dent in on the populations that are in the world as they are now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Can you tell our listeners what's happening to donkeys in China?
Yeah, well, you know, the donkey sanctuary is at the beginning of this journey, but we're putting so much energy into this. This is a really big concern for us. So we have still a lot to learn, but from the report that we put together and launched in January under the skin, we established that in China, their population of donkeys is almost halved in the last sort of decade. So in 1990, when they did their last census, they had 11 million donkeys, and it's down to 6 million in 2014. We know that there are donkeys that work traditionally in China, but we also know that there's a lot of donkeys being farmed specifically for this trade. And there are lots of people encouraging the government to subsidize to do farm donkeys for skins. And, you know, the Ajal industry is significant. One of the leading organizations that's producing Ajal reportedly has over 10,000 staff and gets through a million donkeys a year.
Wow. That's a lot.
It's a multi-billion dollar industry, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we've done is we've launched this report, but I can safely say that in the time that we've launched it, so much has changed and happened since it. So what the Donkey Sanctuary is doing is listening to all that's going on, taking it in. I think that we'll be reviewing our report again shortly and looking at what we want to do to try and help the situation.
Good, good. And by the way, for all our listeners, the report Dawn's talking about is called Under the Skin, issued by the Donkey Sanctuary, and we put a live link to it on the radio show promo. So after the radio show, if you want to click on that and go read in more detail, please do so. It's a very interesting read. Dawn, what about the core or in Brazil or Asia? Can you kind of break down by country what's happening a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've actually been to our project in Ethiopia and Egypt, and so I can really relate to the impact this is having on the ground. So in Africa, I think this is the biggest source of donkeys for outside of Asia for the trade. There are millions of donkeys, but they are working for people. They're working and supporting entire communities, and they really are under threat. So we've heard through our partner organisations, say in Tanzania, for example, that the villagers, one village in particular that we work with, they woke up to find all 24 donkeys had been skinned overnight, and that just must be shocking to see the animals that you care and respect being treated in such a horrific way, but also then the dilemma and the right reality of how on earth do we get our water, how do we get the children to school, how do we go about our lives? And this is something we're seeing across Africa. In Ethiopia, there are there are talks of abattoirs in kind of very high density donkey areas. Now, I think the biggest concern we have as well, not only the sourcing of donkeys, the transport, the way that they are slaughtered, the skins is a huge concern for us from a welfare perspective, but also from a humanitarian perspective. People may sell their donkeys right now for a short-term gain, but I just really hope they start to understand the long-term impact, because what we're finding is where donkeys are being sort of effectively hoovered up. When people actually go to replace their donkey, they realise they actually do need a donkey, then the price of donkeys is doubling, if not fourfold, what they paid for them originally. So this trade is having a really big effect on people's lives too.
These are the people that need them the most vulnerable people.
Absolutely, and I think what the trade doesn't recognise is the value of donkeys. They're just such incredible creatures, as Marjorie speaks of all the time. You know, they are just beautiful animals. They're sensitive creatures, but they're also hugely popular as a working animal because they're so adaptable and hardworking. And they have great memories. You know, I've been to water holes where the donkeys pretty much walk by themselves with their owners behind. They're collecting the water and they head back home again. And definitely. They're so clever. But to see them sort of very quickly demise and disappear from those communities into probably very horrific circumstances, you know. Our partners down in South Africa are having an awful time, and we're doing as much as we can to support them. But they are literally finding lorries full of donkeys that have died en route, and having to euthanize the ones that are left, and with the authorities to try and take things forward. You know, and in some places where we're working, the authorities really are stepping up. There was a case in. Or was it Tanzania, where two people were imprisoned for 6 years by the local government for donkey poaching. So we are working with our partners and local governments, and we are trying to do what we can. But, you know, little steps in a really big sort of situation here.
Didn't they find, like, 10,000 skins in their warehouse, those guys?
Yeah, I mean, there's pockets, there's stories coming out every day, in my view. It's just a kind of endless stream at the moment of awful pictures of scenes that you just never wish to see.
As these bans on donkey skins take place in places like, as the bans on exports take place in Niger, Burkina Faso, and other places, is there a rise in poaching, and what are the authorities doing to counter the poaching beyond, you know, the occasional capture? Are they doing anything proactive?
Yeah, well, like I said, you know, there are cases. Some of the governments we're working with are really stepping up, but this is quite taking everyone by surprise, this trade, in the way that it's growing, and it's just very fast-paced. And there's not necessarily the sort of infrastructure maybe to tackle these cases. They're very different, very unique. But we do know that the governments are trying to do what they can in places. And I also think the Under the Skin report we've developed, we've translated that into 7 languages, including Swahili and Arabic, so that we're visiting. When we're working with all of our partners in 35 countries we're active in now, then we are able to supply that directly to the teams, but also to the governments and regional offices that they're lobbying all the time.
That's great.
Go on.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that it's a really good this Under the Skin report. What I think for me has come out of it is it's become a really useful tool that has genuinely shocked a huge number of our partner organisations and people. You know, it's just shocked a lot of people about the extent of the trade, but it is just the beginning. But I can assure you that the Donkey Sanctuary is putting a lot of energy into looking into this and understanding it properly, so that we can try and help donkeys, because it's just such a powerful way.
I could really tell when I was looking at your website, and you know, it's an excellent report. Plus, there's a lot of additional information on your website. I wanted to ask you, Dawn, can you tell us a little bit about the intensification of donkey production, like making larger, more quickly maturing genetic lines? You're also doing
I can try. I mean, that's a really big concern for us. You know, no one wants to see another animal introduced into the mass farming sort of market, really. And I don't think that donkeys are a being that necessarily find this easy. You know, they don't do well in intensive facilities. There is research in our report that suggests that is the case, and that, you know, I think that comes from donkeys being very sensitive animals. You know, the mares can only produce one foal a year, perhaps. So it's a very slow process. It's not something that they're going to be able to intensify that easily, I can imagine. But the worst thing of all for us, our concern will be about the welfare conditions. And if in this trade people are going to poaching, they're going to setting up farms, are these people who actually understand donkeys and their welfare needs and their feelings? And it's just a big concern for us that this is even being considered, really.
Go ahead, Marjorie.
That's one of the things, is that they're not interested in the meat, so they starve that's why they're in such poor condition when they arrive at the market. They don't feed them or give them water, because they don't care about the condition of the donkey. They just want the skin.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That makes it even
more horrific.
But it's true as well. I mean, one of our partners in South Africa, they did raid a slaughterhouse where they were reportedly deliberately starving the donkeys so that the skins would come off more easily, and they wouldn't invest so much money. But the Donkey Sanctuary, in that particular situation, has helped fund the care of the donkeys that were taken. The team managed to get the donkeys out of that situation, and we're now helping them with the upkeep of those donkeys.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, one concern I had, you know, because I've done a little research into the animal cloning, you know, the University of Idaho here in the United States cloned a mule back in 2003. So my concern is, if they get all these donkey farms, are they going to start cloning donkeys? Or do you know of any clone donkeys yet, Dawn?
No, I'm afraid I don't. It's not something we've heard of.
Yeah, well, I would kind of keep an eye out for that in the future. I know with the wild horses going over the border to Canada for slaughter, you know, a cloning company set up next door. So they were taking the ovaries from slaughtered mares that went to slaughter, and then using those to create cloned horses. So that was really sad.
I will tell you, Deb, that they are importing mammoth donkeys from the United States to China in order to create a bigger, faster-growing breed of donkey. But I don't think they can overcome it takes a year plus for a donkey to reproduce. And they don't do well with IA either. If they, you know, in artificial insemination, they need to be live cover. For them to impregnate the Ginny.
Marjorie, can you tell us a little bit about your concerns regarding the animal welfare in connection with the production of Ijao? We just talked about the transportation, some of these horrific circumstances. Are there any other animal welfare issues?
When they're poached, the poachers are trying to work very quickly because they've stolen the donkeys in the dead of night. So they often start skinning them alive. The bludgeon them because they don't want to make a lot of noise. And these are family partners. These are donkeys that are used to being, you know, part of a partnership in a family, and then to be suddenly yanked in. Yeah, you know, as Don said, they're very sensitive animals, and it's got to be horrifying to them what's happening when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, with the larger, you know, larger poaching operations, again, just as Don was stating, they're starving them on purpose because the skins come off easier, and frankly, they're not concerned about the meat; they only want the skin. There have been some reports about the possibility of live export. I haven't been able to confirm this, but there was supposedly someone in Oklahoma that he's gathered 500 donkeys for live export, but I have not been able to confirm this. That seems like that would be an odd thing to do, to live export them. So I don't know yet.
Yeah. Well, we'll be able to find out about that, but unfortunately it will be after the fact, probably. And a long time after. Don, can you tell us a little bit about both the illegal and legal slaughter?
Different
types of slaughter.
Yeah, I mean, this trade is generating a real industry, you know, but like you say, both legally and illegally. I mean, in the illegal sense, the conditions couldn't be more horrific and hideous, really, for the welfare of donkeys in South Africa. Again, we've had reports of donkeys that have just been clubbed to death in order to get their skins. Donkeys are being poisoned in Tanzania. The village I mentioned to you about, the 24 donkeys that were stolen overnight, they were taken up in the bush, and they were injected with some kind of poison, and their skins were taken. And the team that found the donkeys said that not a single insect was on the body. So whatever they were poisoned with was a really harmful chemical. In Botswana, there was news of donkeys being machine gunned down. You know, it's just a sort of awful situation where people are seeing that there's money to be made, I guess, and at the detriment of the donkeys. But from a legal point of view, there are legal slaughterhouses that are by government, but there are reports that the sort of conditions for holding the donkeys prior to slaughter and moving the animals to be sort of less than satisfactory. And so there's just a lot of concerns for the welfare before and during slaughter that would be are all areas of concern within this trade. It's just not good whichever way you look at it, really.
No, and one thought I had about when you mentioned the poison being injected. So I would wonder if trace amounts, you know, go into the skin, and then that's being used for a medicine, or that something that humans are going to ingest. So,
yes,
you know, even that's a thought, you know, because.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I was sort of saying, the report in January, I believe, is just the beginning, and there's a lot of work that we want to do to better understand this whole situation. And one of our key recommendations is about ensuring that there's enough public awareness about the impact of this trade, so that people who are buying actually make an informed decision. You know, I think the biggest thing is that this is being marketed as a, you know, a great savior for, you know, anti-aging skin creams, cancer cures, something that was once fit for emperors is now available to the mass market. But I don't know if people realize that what they're putting on their faces potentially has come off the back of a community in Tanzania who once relied on those donkeys in a community, and you know, it's just really, it's really awful to think that this is going on.
No, I agree with that. I had one other quick question. That who regulates traditional Chinese medicine? Do we do it here in the U.S.? Do they do it in the European Union? Does China do it at all? So, you know, we're talking about that they inject toxic substances into donkeys. You know, if it's taken orally in human beings, like, you know, that's there. It seems like there's very little, if very little or no regulation on it.
There's kind of two things. I mean, the thing that we wouldn't necessarily say it's Chinese that are injecting the donkeys with poison. You know, there are people within each of the countries where there's a popular trade that are contributing and supporting this wider industry. In terms of regulations, I don't actually know, but I would just say that traditional Chinese medicine is part of culture in China, and I don't know if that is regulated. And to a degree, that these are traditional medicines that have been around for thousands of years, and Ijiao has been as well. It's just that it's very recently come into the mass market, and that's why we've all of a sudden in the last 2 to 3 years seen a huge spike in the number of donkeys needed.
Well, what's the economic impact of Ijiao production?
I don't personally know. It's something that, you know, I'm sure lots of people are interested in. All I know from the report is that for every kilo of Ijiao, it's worth $375 per kilo. So it's clearly a really popular product.
I meant it's costing all these people worldwide their livelihoods. Have there been any economic studies done yet by any universities or anything of, say, by country or area, examples of how much this, you know, harms the economics of a region?
That's definitely something we're collecting information on to understand a little bit better. But in our report, we also talk about, we do have the net economic values of working donkeys, say, in Ethiopia being $330. I don't know if that's actually dollars, or £2.60 per annum. But then if you consider that potential working lifespan of maybe 20 years, there's a real mismatch between any short-term gain in selling a working animal and the potential value of that animal relating it to 1 year's work. So, they might get a quick gain in a bit of cash in hand, but longer term, it will be to their detriment.
Well, I wanted to really quickly, I wanted to remind our listeners, if anyone has any questions and would like to call in with a question for our guests, you dial area code 917-388-4520, then press 1. Go ahead, Marjorie. Didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's fine. I was just, as far as the economic impact, what are the problems? This has stuck up on us over the past 10 years very quietly, insidiously. The donkeys have been in the last, two or three years that it's, the impact has been so great that people are starting to notice. So we're really behind the eight ball as far as being able to, for one, getting a worldwide overview on the population of donkeys, and as far as being able to study impact. I do know that children are no longer able to go to school because they've lost their family donkeys. I know that the women now are having to carry wood and water, and now are unable to do other things because they're just trying to survive. The basic survival mode. So it's a terrible humanitarian crisis. So I'm hoping that that not only animal welfare associations will get on board, but also people that are involved in humanitarian issues as well will see this as a crisis.
I'm gonna kind of quickly jump to the United States here, John. Have you heard of any counts on how many donkeys are entering Mexico from the United States for slaughter and then to be sent to China? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't have any data. There's just no data available. It's really difficult. That's the kind of invisibility of the trade, if you like. We do have a big project in Mexico, and we are looking into things, but these can take time to kind of find out what's really going on the ground, because this trade is
We have an expert here, John Holland. I might put John Holland on the task. He's president of Equine Welfare Alliance, and he's good at looking at USDA records. So I'll see if he can look up any data and volunteer to help with that a little bit.
That would be great. We partner with UNAM, the university. So that would be great. That's one of the really key things about the report. Like, we couldn't have done this report without all the feedback and the input from all of the donkey sanctuary partners, but also just people genuinely interested in what's going on and wanting to tell us. So that, and then we've really just facilitated collecting kind of a first picture of this trade. But I think it's really developing very quickly. It continues a pace.
I will tell you, Deb, that they've been, it is, Mexico is a confirmed export country.
No, I know. I would bet that. I know. Marjorie wants to ask you some questions, but before she does, I did want to bring up Brazil, like what's happening in Brazil with Ijao.
Yeah, again, it's similar to Mexico, that they're, it's confirmed, but there's not huge amounts of information available at the moment. In our report, we did include a couple of examples of stories we'd heard. But I think the biggest issue here is feral donkey populations, or wild donkey populations like you have in America. These are sources of donkeys that they can harvest donkeys from in a very different way. But there's really big welfare issues around the feral populations in terms of how do they capture them, how far are they transporting them. The welfare will be absolutely enormous. Concern for their welfare will be enormous. I think what the report also did was show us where we have information gaps and where we're now trying to fill those gaps. So again, if there's any lists or you have any contact, then the Donkey Sanctuary would be really appreciative of sort of hearing more, so that we can better understand everything.
Good. Well, we're trying to help get the word out, so everyone can share this radio show and include a link to your report. I think that's really important. Every person, if you want to just make a difference today, share a link to the radio show. It will be archived shortly after the show, and share a link to the Donkey Sanctuary report. Marjorie, I know you had some questions you wanted to ask Don. Do you want to go ahead and ask?
Yes. I was just wondering if DSUK has explored any products that could easily provide the same benefits that the Chinese say that the Ijao provides.
Yeah, I think we're really up against it there, in the fact that Ijao has been so successfully marketed as a great product, and you've only got to look at the demand being as potentially as many as them needing 10 million donkey hides in order to create the product. I think our focus is about and this is probably a next step for us in terms of kind of our awareness side of things, is to raise awareness about the impact of the trade, so that Ijao consumers kind of make an informed decision. And I think when they see the reality of what goes behind the Ijao product, maybe they'll think twice before buying the product. And that's where we're going to kind of focus our energy in that sense.
Good.
The IUCN, which is the International Union for Conservation of Nature, have they been contacted about the impending doom that's about to befall the world's population of donkeys? Have they been contacted? Because I know that the criteria, if there's a 80% drop over a period of time or numbers. So I in looking at the criteria that they call for, I would say that the donkeys are already endangered. So I was just wondering if IUCN had been notified by your
We haven't yet, Marjorie, but, you know, we're also really reliant on fantastic organisations like yourselves and Donkey Breed Society organisations to champion these kind of things. We are sort of more involved with the FAO, who do the count of donkeys in the world, and so if we can help alert them to the skin trade and how that is affecting donkey populations, and we can get better figures that support alerting the IUCN, then we would do those things. But equally, obviously, our charity objectives are slightly different. So our focus hasn't always been on the wild breeds as such, but obviously they're a huge interest of ours, and we would support organisations that are trying to champion for these breeds to be preserved. And who knows, we may get more involved as this develops.
Well, there are some breeds of donkeys that are already in trouble. The African wild ass, Equus africanus, the Pega donkeys of Brazil, they are the pride of Brazil. They're a gated donkey that's popular for breeding gated mules. They are even going through slaughter. I have a contact in Brazil who has told me that they're going through. So are any steps being taken to protect the special breeds that are already listed as threatened or critically endangered?
I think all I can say is right now I don't have the information to say yes or no to you, but I would say that we're probably not as well informed about those particular breeds if they're being embroiled into the trade, and that sharing that information would be really helpful to us.
Okay. Yes, I can give you that information. I have someone that wants to help. And also, he actually is someone that has been involved in the skin trade for the last 3 years, and he wants out of it. And he's got 500 acres. He said, please, someone do that. Help me produce something else. You know, I suggested essential oils, producing those, or coconut oil. There are a lot of products. He thinks that if that could be passed around, if investors could invest in other things, that many of the Brazilians really don't have a good taste for this. They don't like it. They say that he said the slaughter takes place at night, and then the trucks roll out in the morning, and the city goes on without actually having it in their face. But they're going out of the port there. So
I think it would be interesting if everyone could contribute to a central database where we have all the like manufacturers that use these products listed, and the companies that are doing it, something like that, so people know what not to buy and what not to support. That would be something that groups can work on too. Not you. I'm not putting everything on the donkey thing. Just throwing some ideas out there.
I think the more people that can talk about this, the better, really. So, you know, like I say, the Donkey Sanctuary is putting a lot of energy into this. And just going back to sort of preserving special breeds, we are working very recently. We've agreed to fund some work with the Andean Tapir Fund in Peru, where they've been killing the burros and trading their skins for the trade. And the things that we're helping with is, we're pressing local leaders to install security gates in some of the access routes to the current habitats of the donkeys. We're looking at radio programs to draw attention to all the people of local town regarding the importance of and the function of the donkeys. So there are pockets of projects when we approach it, we really can do something right now to help, and that's what we're doing in Peru. So, and it's just the more of us that talk about it, the better.
Well, can you tell me which large organizations are actually on board and actively working to this project? Like, for instance, there's you. How involved is the Brook, Pegasus, World Wildlife Federation, NFPCA, RSPCA, some of these larger organizations? Do you have a consensus or an idea of how many large organizations are taking this seriously?
Yeah, I mean, we are really championing this. This is one of the reasons we printed thousands of the Under the Skin reports as a proper report, and we've been distributing this, and we already have fantastic working coalition with the big UK equine charities, Brooks, Barna, World Health Welfare, and we've actually joined a coalition to inform the World Organization for Animal Health on equine matters to ensure that the needs of donkeys, horses and ponies and mules are met, even the most basic. And so we've had platforms like the OIE conference to raise the traders' donkey skins. And we've also joined recently Bond, which is a humanitarian development coalition of organisations, and we managed to have a stand there very recently with huge number of international organisations, not only talking about the importance of donkeys, but mentioning and promoting the skin trade report and trying to raise people's awareness of it. So yes, and then within each of the countries where we work, we are lobbying at local levels with government, for sure.
Is there more visibility in the legislation, Dawn?
With Sorry?
The local is that for more visibility of donkeys when there's legislation?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my colleague Alex, who travels to many of our projects, has been to our two meetings with our partners to champion this, to bring this report to people's attention, and to you know, one of our recommendations as well is about working with governments and local authorities to join our efforts to support affected communities and to just bring it home how important the donkeys are to the people as well. So it's in their interest to look after the welfare of the donkeys and sort of minimise their involvement in this trade, because it will affect their communities and their country.
Yeah, one of the most striking comments in the report for me was, it said, donkeys are commonly owned by the most resource-limited and vulnerable communities with little voice or access to decision-makers at higher levels. Such marginalization leaves the communities prone to unethical trading practices, theft, and extreme market pricing. But it just, you know, it just shows that the people that rely on donkeys the most have very little, you know, resources to have a voice in government. So I think it's really important that organizations like the Donkey Sanctuary and you know, as many other organizations as we can get interested in this issue, and they should be interested, have to work with you on this legislation and support it.
Thank you.
The world's watching. Yeah.
Well, there is some good news. I'm sorry.
No, carry on.
I was going to say there is some good news emerging from China. There are along with the increase in wealth in the middle class, that also has brought about a whole generation of people that are concerned with animal rights and animal welfare. It's a small and growing voice, but if they can be encouraged to continue to speak for donkeys in their province and can be made more aware of the impact worldwide and be supported by the world, instead of, you know, just saying, oh, I hate the Chinese or I hate what they do. That's not the right approach. We need to bring them on board, you know, to help with this problem.
Yeah.
You know? Absolutely. And you know, it's the product this is about. This isn't just a product that's bought in China. This is bought in the UK in traditional Chinese medicine or you know, trades. It's on sale on Amazon and eBay. You know, it's a global trade. The demand is enormous, and we just need to collect a little bit more information, and then I think we'll be ready to sort of show consumers what goes what's under the skin. You know, it's what's under, what's behind this product that looks so, sounds so great. The reality is, it's donkeys from Africa, from Americas, from feral populations, from communities, and we need to really understand that, be able to demonstrate the real impact, and that's what we're working so hard on at the moment, and all the while trying to communicate where we can with our organisation, with our partners, and the people on the ground, sort of how perhaps to take note of what's going on.
I wonder if pharmaceutical companies could be contacted for help, because they have deep pockets.
They might try
and
cash in on it. You know, they might try.
No, not on Ejow, but an alternative to Ejow.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah.
In fact, this report about activists in China was actually funded by a pharmaceutical company.
Good. Don, I forgot to ask you, what are the environmental impacts of producing gel like they are?
It's probably more to do, I'm not an expert on this, I have to say, but there were examples where the slaughter plants were causing local unrest because of the environmental pollution from the slaughterhouses.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think
like in
maybe,
the water and the groundwater and stuff like that.
Yeah, potentially. But also, you know, I know Compassion in Wild Farming, they take a real angle on the environmental impact of mass farming. And, you know, if donkeys are going down the route where donkeys are going to be mass farmed, then there will be environmental issues to come because, you know, keeping... I can't even imagine a farm of 10,000 donkeys. That's enormous. And who knows how that would impact the environment. And it's ironic.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's ironic because in the way that donkeys work in Africa, for example, they're probably one of the most carbon neutral methods of transport you could get. yet this trade could flip it and turn donkeys into you know, the process for getting their skin into an environmental issue.
Marjorie, did you have another question you wanted to ask Don?
Is there a way, just what we can do to speak to the Chinese government, since they call this a, you know, an intangible cultural heritage product? Is there a way to convince them that after 3,000 years that they, you know, would we approach them by saying that the world is not happy about this? If you want to produce in your country and do it humanely, that's one thing. But when you're speaking all of the world's donkeys, then that's another. Is there anything the world can do?
I think this is new ground for us. You know, this was not that the skin trade was not on our radar maybe 5 years ago at all. It's such a new thing, and I think that the report is the first step, and that has given us enormous exposure already, particularly in national press and international press. And I think it has gained momentum, and we will be looking at lots of different ways to tackle this phase.
I think we have a caller with a question. Do we have a caller, Marty?
Yeah, you do. Area code 530. You're live and on the air.
Okay. Hi, welcome to Wild Horse and Burro Radio. We're kind of getting to the last 6 minutes of the show, so if you have a quick question, that's good, but we kind of have to start wrapping up soon.
Okay, I'll wrap it up. Have you guys ever heard of the Black Mamba Anti-Poaching Unit in South Africa? It's an all-women anti-poaching unit. They work in the parks, and they're trained, and they've got the technology. I don't believe they're armed, but they're in the camo clothes, and they're out and about. I wonder if that could be expanded. Work on the ground with the people there and get the technology and get some of the some of these groups behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Would that help protect them there?
It's Dawn speaking. I mean, we could certainly mention this group to some of our partners down in South Africa and see what there is to help. There's three organisations that are all working together really hard to look at the skin trait. And I'm sure that, you know, knowing of this group, it could be really helpful.
Yeah, taking that idea and expanding it on the different continents. The other thing I'm thinking about is the export. Now, if you could block it, if you can have John Holland look at the USDA. I listened to a report somewhere where they hide it somehow. They hide that cargo to where it's not immediately visible. But if you could get it blocked where they won't take it out of the country, I'm thinking right offhand of the Longshoremen's Union. Some groups that have some swack.
Yeah, for our country.
Sherry,
I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're kind of getting in the last few minutes of the show, so I've got to wrap it up. But thanks for calling in. And we certainly want to have Dawn on again sometime. So, you know, we'll ask her more then. But thanks for calling.
Okay.
Dawn, last question I wanted to ask you. What can our listeners do to help?
Well, that's great of you to ask, because the Donkey Sanctuary would very much welcome donations, as you can probably imagine. We are funding quite a lot of work through the skin trade right now, so more donations would enable us to continue to do that. But actually, I think sometimes people like to just sort of give donkeys a voice or give animals a voice, and we can definitely facilitate that. So if you Google the Donkey Sanctuary Under the Skin, or you go to our website, or you click on the link on your radio show, there is a Act Now section for the skin trade. And what we're looking for, it's almost like a petition. You can count yourself in to stand behind us in our report and what we're doing with it. Because every time we go and give our report, we tell the audience, that we're the captive audience, just how many people are behind us wanting this trade to be noticed and changed, because it's to be halted, because it's not sustainable and it's causing immeasurable suffering.
And just so it's the donkeysanctuary.org.uk. So
yeah,
the donkeysanctuary.org.uk. We're winding up the last couple minutes. You have one more thing you want to say? Go ahead.
Yeah, also you can register on that page for our special e-newsletter, just purely about this skin trade, so that when we're ready with our next report or update, you can be the first to hear about it through our e-newsletter.
Would that be at the top of the page where it says sign up?
Yeah, it's in the under the skin section of the report.
Oh, okay.
There's a very specific email that you can sign up to.
I know Marjorie and I are going to sign up for sure.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we only got a couple minutes left, and I wanted to thank both of you for being on today, and thank you for all you're both amazing. I admire the Donkey Sanctuary UK for all the great work they're doing. I can tell just by reading the report and by looking at your website the tremendous amount of effort you've put into this. And I want to thank our own Marjorie Farabee for all of her hard work, because she's been talking my ear off about Ijao for quite a while now. And you know, like her hair's on fire, which is great. We love Marjorie for that. And I want to thank our producer, Marty Oakley, for helping us with the show today. I want to tell our audience that TS Radio has two other shows. One is called Voices Carried for Animals. It's on Tuesday evenings, hosted by Deb Dahmer. The other one's called Whistleblowers. It's on Thursday evenings, hosted by Marty Oakley, our producer. Again, I'd like to thank our guests. I'd like to thank our listeners. Share a link to the show with other people. And thanks again, Dawn. We appreciate you taking the time to
You're
call
very
in.
Welcome. It's a pleasure to come and talk about it. Well, it's not, but
great.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, I know. And we'll keep in touch. We'll keep in touch. I'd love to have you back on again sometime.
I'd love that. Thank you.
Okay. Good night, everyone. Good afternoon and good night, everyone.
Good afternoon and good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.